The following podcast is for mature audiences only, so hey, look, if you're under 18, just turn it off, okay?
Do you know the secrets of making friends? They are so simple and easy. That looks easy enough, and Joey is going to try it out.
Hey guys, it's Miss Jenga.
It's Freckles.
Captain Jack is still out pillaging booty. We'll have him back on soon.
Plundering the high seas.
Yeah, he's getting some booty straightened out. His gold coin, right. His eye patch, maybe a new parrot or something. I don't know what he's doing. But we have a guest, Jack.
Sweet.
Or Jack S.
All right.
Yes. Not a jackass.
She can be a guest captain.
She can be a guest captain. I like jackass, though. We have with us the lovely Timid Tramp. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Just really happy to be here with you tonight.
Yeah. We are broadcasting from the lovely Seattle in your castle. You have a beautiful view
domain,
here.
Yeah.
This is really nice. I didn't look out the window before.
View of the hills.
Yes. Yes. Like I said, don't be a princess, be a priestess. So
my hair's hanging out the window.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And you've provided our lovely drink of the week. We've got a wonderful semi-sweet Seattle hard cider. I'm going to...
It's been my drink of the month, maybe even my drink of the summer.
Well, an apple a day keeps the doctor
Cheers.
Away.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome.
And welcome.
That's doable.
I'm going to drink the cider, not the microphone.
Yeah. You put it in your mouth. I'm not a judger.
Aw. Dared me.
I know. So we hooked up actually about a year ago or so when I was still in full swing at New Horizons.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Not at
and,
all.
You were starting some really interesting projects here in the Seattle area under the name Timid Tramp, and you're building an empire.
I am that.
Yes.
Yeah, the best.
So and you've got a couple events coming up, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But you are doing a really sexy, sensual, classy, like super classy dinner and show, basically surrounding some sex positive stuff, BDSM, that type of thing. And also some personal growth stuff too.
That's right.
Yeah. So, how long have you been doing the BDSM thing?
You know, I found out about it when I first moved to Seattle and was immediately intrigued, but in keeping with the Timid Tramp, it took me 3 years to be willing to investigate it really at all personally.
Yeah.
So for about the last 3 years.
So what piqued your interest? The 50 Shades of
Bullshit?
You know,
that was a little bit like the, you know, the movement that that was, I don't know, as if I needed permission. But it really was a little like having permission from the mainstream to open up this conversation in a way that was appealing and available.
And a lot of people celebrate the books and the movie and stuff like that specifically for that. And I can get behind that. Don't necessarily agree with the delivery, but you know, we're able to embrace that and say, all right, any means necessary, right?
And you know, at first I was unwilling to read them. And you know, one of the first people I met when I moved to Seattle was Elena Gabosh. Just such an inspiration, such a model for what was possible that, you know, I was inspired. And she really recommended that I read that book. And I said, oh, God, really? Really? What is this? This is statistic, right? And so I did, you know. And as I read the books, I could see really the value of the conversation that was wanting to be had.
Okay.
Whether it was actually being had in that material or not is irrelevant. It, you know, the popularity and the demand for the content was really about what people were looking for, what they were hoping for, not what got provided.
Sure. And had you been having a lot of sex before that? Or was that?
I have five kids.
Oh, well, so five times.
Wow. At least.
Yeah. But was that truly your first introduction?
To BDSM?
Yeah.
Like I said, I knew of it
when
I first moved here because I met Elena like right out of the gate.
Okay.
Doing some personal development work. But I was timid. I was totally like dancing around the edges of it. Thought it was a great idea. But
you were still a tramp.
No way. I was a tramp in hiding. I was a tramp undercover.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That cover. And I, so it just really took me a while to feel like I could trust the conversation. I could trust the content. I could trust the resources. I could trust the people. And that's really what it took, you know, over time.
Yeah.
Was getting acquainted with the people, getting acquainted with what they were actually up to, not what I thought they were up to.
Yeah.
And that it just took a while.
And you know, misconceptions were pretty shattered.
In a way. You know, my misconceptions of only strange, wrong, broken people do this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which must include me.
Right.
You know, sure.
Right.
Because I'm interested in this thing.
Well, yeah.
And then it went to, wait a minute. All I hear here is empowerment, strengthening, trust building. Hmm. There's got to be something to it.
It's a weekend retreat.
Dope.
Yeah. And we went through that too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, when we got together, it was 20 something years ago. And there wasn't information. The internet didn't exist. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Right.
The internet is for porn. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. But, you know, there were some things that I was interested in trying that I had no language for. There were some interests. You know, kind of explored, and but it wasn't, there was no structure around it, and there was no where to go to get more education or information. And it was very much a closed society because there were people that were getting raided and arrested.
Yeah.
You know, it was considered domestic violence. It didn't matter what shade you were practicing, you know, spankings were spankings.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
But you got some information from some solid people, and you were seeing that it wasn't just about re-experiencing trauma or abuse or
or just a like a bunch of weirdos exercising their freedoms or their liberties.
Well, we are, but
well, but see, I got to be at home with it. That was no problem, right?
Okay.
Initially,
so
it was like a
your
problem.
Weirdo.
I embraced my inner freak, like, you know, on a bandwagon.
Yeah, gonzoed it up there, huh?
I did.
Not that you're into chickens or anything, but I'm just, you know.
Chickens.
Yeah.
Got sound effects.
Could be neat.
So I, you know, when I originally met her, I was inspired, and I couldn't, you know.
She's just inspiring.
Yeah.
I like to call her the anti-mame of BDSM.
And she approves, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, she loves it. She loves
Annie Oakley, all of that.
Yeah.
And so I was more moved by the essence of who she was than the content, you know, or this thing that she was about. And I just kind of kept an eye on things. So then I went ahead and went to some orientations at the center. Mm-hmm. That was her recommendation. I was,
and you're referring to CSPC.
The Center for Sex Positive Culture, which used to be called the Wet Spot, of course. And so I went, and I went to an event there, and I had this interesting, like, kind of taster experience. And it wasn't until I was actually in the building with the people doing this thing that I got it. And it just, something just clicked. And seeing what was happening and experiencing the energy of what was happening was very different than hearing about it.
Sure.
Of course, right? So when I walked into that event, it just kind of hit me in the chest, you know, how beautiful it was for people to have the freedom to exercise these interests in a safe space where they were honored. And as a community, people were interested in the fullest expression of the human being doing whatever they were doing.
Getting their freak on.
Whatever the heck it is, you know. And that's what I got moved by.
Nice.
And that's what solidified my, you know, like my resolve. Okay, now I'm really going to do this. I'm really going to check this out and put myself in the middle of it instead of just dancing around the edge.
Nice.
So that was 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I danced around the edge for 3 years.
So what did you try first?
The first thing I did is I went to this taster event. It was this really cool thing called the Kinky Carnival.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that a great name?
Love it.
It was a great name. And
was Carnival spelled with a K?
I can't even remember. I was so afraid of the word kinky that I couldn't even get to the rest of it. It just says kinky.
I'm just a dork like that. Like,
you think of these things.
Yeah.
So I went and I took some friends. Like, I drugged some friends who had no idea what it was. And they were like, what did you do? And it was on this lunch break from this other thing we were doing.
Even better.
It was hysterical. It really was a freak show. And I didn't even really know these people. So anyhow, that's another story. But and each of us had this amazing time and came away with a whole separate, like, distinct story of what happened for us there. Because we kind of parted ways when we walked through the door. I was like, I'm going to go do this thing. You go do your thing. We'll meet back up at, you know, check our clocks. And
so it really was like going to a carnival.
And we just turned ourselves loose.
Went down the midway. Yeah.
I mean, there were hundreds of people there at all these different booths doing this cool stuff. And I was really drawn to this woman who was being flogged by this enormous man. And she was really tiny. But her partner was inside the St. Andrew's Cross holding her hands through the, you know, the structure and looking into her eyes while she was being flogged. I mean, like lifted up off the ground, flogged.
Ow.
And I was I couldn't explain what I was seeing, but I knew that the chills running through my body were real and something was like processing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just got moved by it. I mean, I was spellbound.
Just the intimacy between those two. And
the trust, the obvious surrender, the serenity that was right there after the impact and the, you know, this ordeal she had put herself in, you know, willingly, you know, hungrily. It was clear, you know, that that was the case. And there was just no place for that to fit in my brain, but it registered in my bones. You know, it registered all the way in my bones. And but okay, there's something here. I don't have any, I don't know how to explain this, but this is freaking awesome.
Right.
And it took me a while to process that. It was probably a year later that I was willing to go back to an orientation where you find out how the CSPC works and what the rules are and all the conduct, you know. And I thought that was really great too. Just responsible and smart and respectful and wise. And I went to 3 orientations before over that next year. I just like was like, I'll just go to another orientation and make sure that it was that cool. And so, you know, Elena and I joke about that. And she'd say, so are you a member yet? And I'd be like, no.
I finally got my membership a couple weekends ago.
See?
I'm like, all right. But, you know, and I support the center. I go do education there. And
oh, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's a great place.
What an incredible resource.
Yeah. It's truly the community center for that type of sex positive. I mean, they nailed it. They nailed it because there's a really lot of different events that go on in education pieces. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So why'd you continue? What was it? I mean, you speak about surrender and intimacy. God. And
so.
Because it's a leap to go from, you know, being at a kinky carnival to then deciding to start a business. I mean, that's you jumping in the deep end of the pool there, sister.
There's a little bit of backstory to that, and it's where I came from.
Ah, the superhero origin story. Yes.
Perfect.
Here we go.
Here's the origin.
Buckle in, folks.
Hang on.
I love these.
You know, I was raised in a very conservative home. Wound up growing up most of my time in a small town in North Idaho.
Oh, Idaho, military Idaho.
Famalo. Famalo, even. Yeah. Family hoes. In Idaho. And I, you know, it was something that I wanted from the time I was like 12. I knew that there was an awareness that I had around sexuality.
So you
that
wanted a spanking? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I got plenty of those for all the wrong reasons. I kind of sensed like there was something off about my family and about our culture at large.
Sure.
Around topics of sex, certainly in my family. So as a mother of 4 daughters and a son, I was really committed that as, you know, a mom, that I provide, of course, as we do, what my parents didn't, and, you know, do a really great job with all of that. So, you know, I raised them in a sex positive environment and conversations, but I could see that that wasn't present in the world. And if I was going to give my life after raising kids to something that really mattered to me, it would really be for making the environment that was in our home available to other families and other parents.
Okay.
So that was where it started.
You tell me more about raising your kids sex positive, because we did too, and we got a lot of flack for it.
Yeah.
And now I'm reading articles about, oh, these breakthrough ideas and concepts. And I'm like, shit, I was doing that 20 years ago and I got kicked out of the playground for that. Are you joking? Like, you're not allowed here because you're talking about penises and vaginas and using the right words. So what are some pro tips you'd give people that are trying to raise their kids in a sex positive world or a sex positive environment in this particular world?
Pro tips. You know,
or what do you do with them? I mean,
sure. And absolutely I can speak to that. But really, before I knew that I was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I had my babies at home. That's where it started. And mostly they watched
illegal in most states.
In a lot of states, it was at the time. Because yeah, 20 years ago, that was not cool. Yep. And so they saw, you know, the older ones saw babies born.
Right.
And they knew how babies happened. It wasn't a secret. It wasn't a mystery. And it certainly wasn't bad or scary or dirty.
Sure.
And so there's that. And so as a conversation in our home, sex wasn't a dirty, bad thing. Mm-hmm. And it just got talked about when it got talked about in a way that was not scary.
Yeah. Age appropriate. Answer the questions totally. That they ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead yeah. of.
Use the proper terminology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, those basics. And I really didn't learn some of that stuff until later because we were, as an early family, we were very conservative Christian. So okay. there was a lot of protection going on. But as, you know, they got you older.
And you and your husband were. And then you both came from strong Christian households or no?
Nope.
It was something you just picked up on your own.
I did. Oh. It was my rebellion. It was my version of rebellion.
Ah, okay.
Oh, I've been warned about that with my own children.
I was raised as a Catholic light and okay. my version of rebellion was to become a very strong Seventh-day Adventist and go for broke. You know. Yeah. 180.
Yeah.
Really
yeah,
piss him
yeah,
off.
Yeah. Did it work?
It did actually. It was nice. Surprisingly yeah, vindicating. But but really when I saw the other families and was witness and party to and then, you know, participated in conversations that I was clear didn't resonate with me around separation. I mean, you know, the whole gay lesbian conversation in the Christian church at the time was very anti that.
Right.
You couldn't even have that conversation without, you know, sounding like a complete, you know, just a freak. And a,
right.
And so I started that. Some of that stuff just started rubbing. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not teaching my kids this.
Good.
This isn't working for me. I'm sure as hell not going to have my kids grok this information and make it who they are. Cause right. I'm not even, I can't get behind this. There's no way. So you know, a lot of that was going on. But the sex positive home part really was, I was clear for myself that one of the things that lended to the maladies in my relationship in my first marriage were being ashamed of sex, being humiliated about having suffered some molestation mm-hmm, stuff mm-hmm. and trying to just buck up and be strong about it and pretend it hadn't happened and that I was over it. And the, you know, I didn't want my kids to deal with, we can't talk to mom and dad about something that goes on.
Right.
And I thought, wow, how do I make this environment a place where they can safely bring any information
right.
to the people who can do something about it.
Right.
So we had some occasions to deal with that. And I realized that I was still stuck in my hangups about stuff that I dealt with. And it wasn't, those conversations weren't effective initially. And that was when I just kind of put the brakes on and went, whoa, this isn't working. We've got to completely adjust how we're addressing these issues with them now that they're getting older. And there just wasn't about face. There was a moment when there wasn't about face.
Nice.
And it started to cause problems in my church participation. It started to cause challenges.
Huh.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was starting to rub the hair the wrong way. And that was when I realized, you know, to honor what I knew was what human beings really needed. Mm-hmm. And to honor my own system of values of just the dignity and beauty of human sexuality, I was really going to have to stand up against some hard, fast rules of the church.
Right.
And some hard, fast rules of my family, which was even harder, of course. Right. Anyhow, so, you know, my kids just knew that they could talk to me about all of that stuff mm-hmm. and kept that conversation open. And it's just made a huge difference.
Nice.
So that such that when my oldest daughter was dating a girl...
There you go.
And nobody else. Everybody was like, oh, they're such good friends. Uh-huh. And I'm looking around going, y'all have no clue. And I, you know, I honored her request to keep that between us because mm-hmm. she wasn't ready to speak to it or to be open or out about it. And then we dealt with just the reality of her having to out herself to her dad so that she wasn't living
a
facade.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's huge. It was huge for her. She was 16 and she had to deal with this. And her girlfriend, who was in this Christian home and scared to death for her parents to find out. Right.
Yeah.
So I just honored the conversation. We talked a lot between the three of us and I supported them And that was really the distinct separation from the family of origin, conservative, safe, don't tell anybody, keep it a secret thing, right, to, no, we're going to put this on the table. We're going to be proud, out loud, real, honest, integrous, and honor what this is instead of categorizing it as something that shouldn't be.
Right. Nice.
And it was amazing what happened after that.
Very so cool.
That was the biggest shift ultimately. And that catapulted the rest of it.
So was she exploring her sexuality as a lesbian, or was she solid in that?
No. And it was so great because a couple of years later, someone asked her that very question. Mm-hmm. And she said at a microphone, in front of a bunch of people, she was in this course sharing, you know, about what had happened. She said, it isn't that I was a lesbian or am a lesbian. It's that I was exploring love.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
She said, I didn't identify any of that as being bisexual, lesbian, or anything else. It's just that
I love this person.
I trust this person. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to be intimate with this person, and I don't care if it's male or female. That's not the point. The point was love.
Yeah.
And the room cheers, you know, because it got that communication. And she was like 18 at the time. Nice. She had that conversation standing at a microphone. It was just
I'm always curious because that's a big thing that I experienced being pretty involved in the gay culture when I was in high school. And it was, you know, it was a while back, but it was very much about, I better be sure that this is who I am before I come out, because there's no going back kind of thing,
right,
you know,
yeah,
for sure.
And I appreciate that we are in a culture now that's more accepting. So you can say stuff like that and it's not an immediate rejection from the gay community. You know, because even back then it was too. Like, you know, if you went back and decided you didn't like to suck cock anymore, well, you were out, you know. seriously, I mean, it was vicious on both sides.
Yeah.
So I was curious about that progression and how, you know.
Yeah, of course, speaking to the defensiveness, you know, the hurt and the defensiveness that then happens in that cycle, kind of that crazy cycle. But there was all of the fear leading up to the discovery of it by her dad or any of her grandparents or the, you know, her partner's parents and the whole thing, and how to handle that wisely, and to put down the defenses and to just honor their relationship, and give her all the freedom in the world to say what she needed to say and to do this how she needed to do it without selling out on herself. You know, like there was this kind of interesting fine balance, and, that was the really this amazing learning lesson. And one of my very specific reasons for moving to Seattle from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, was that I had heard something about this sex positive culture. And I thought, you know, that's the kind of place I want to live, where they can say sex and positive in the same sentence.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I didn't even know what it really meant at the time, but
none of us did. We didn't know the rabbit hole we were going down.
Wow. Yeah. That can just go all over the place. But I knew I wanted to be in that conversation, whatever the hell it was. I wanted to be in it.
That's cool. So
that was a huge part of what got me here.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I'd been a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. I did not go to college. My school was another school, and I'm not sorry for it. But it did present a challenge to a nearly 40-year-old woman, divorced, with no alimony or child support, moving to Seattle with no job and no place to live. It was a little challenging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I knew that what I was committed to was bigger than any of those concerns. And I just did the leap.
So you followed your vagina. I love that story.
To the bones. All the way to the bones. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So then you came here and you, I assume, found some sort of employment. And
2009. Yep. I scrapped around for a cocktail waitress.
Nice.
I worked for Starbucks. I did some interesting stuff that I never thought I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an adventure town, man. I mean, I've had some seriously cool experience. We both have. We've had some, good stuff happen.
Well, that was one of the things. I knew that the odds of finding some kind of employment that I could be reasonably satisfied with was much higher here than in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah.
I'd done interior design. I'd been freelancing for a while. It was fine, but wasn't what I wanted to do
you know,
for the rest of my life. I really wanted to discover a business. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, own my own business. I had no clue what it was going to be, but I knew Seattle was probably a better place to try to do that than Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah.
So I jumped.
Cool.
And that was 2009.
Okay. All right, and here we are 6 years later, and you're launching your Timid Tramp empire.
I am. She's really in full swing in startup. Is a startup business. It still is. I've been talking about it, developing it for 2 years. It feels like I should have made it past the startup point by now.
Seven year itch, baby. You'll be ready to go.
But, the simple piece, and I think this is, I hope that this is a piece that anyone can relate to, is that beautiful piece of following an absurd dream.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all Wizard of Oz. It's all...
Well, this is the Emerald City, so...
I know. I love that part. So I couldn't justify it to anyone that I was moving away from my hometown and my five children. They did not move with me.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mom of the Year award right there. Woo. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Lots of banners going up about that. Bumper stickers and everything.
Mom's moving to Seattle to start a sex business. Woo!
We love that stuff. it wasn't a popular choice.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with that. But one of the, this is another one of those bright moments that was just crystal clear indicator that this was really the only thing to do.
Yeah.
When I had made the determination that I was going to move, I had given all the kids my, hey guys, I'm going to do this crazy thing.
Right.
Gathered them all together on the bed and said, okay, family conference. Because I'd made the decision, but I hadn't made the actual move. I was still like, hedgy. This is crazy. This is stupid. I shouldn't be doing this. And it was that like vicious circle cycle conversation of who the hell do you think you are? What right have you got? The nerve.
All those negative critics.
Every single value system that had been established as the, good solid foundation of a family and what a mom does.
Yeah.
It was just flying in the face of all that. And so I have them all gathered together and I say, hey guys, I got this kind of crazy idea. I'm ready to move now. I know I said I was going to move in 2 years and it's only been a year and a half, but I'm telling you right now it's the time to move. But I'm still kind of hung up about something. And my oldest daughter then was 16.
Mm-hmm. Critical time for a daughter.
Wise, beautiful little creature that she is. And she's like, well, what's the deal, Mom? We totally support you. We know this is the right thing for you to do. We totally are behind you. You should definitely go to Seattle and we'll come see you. And their dad's great. I knew they were going to be totally cared for.
Sure.
And I said, well, let me look. And I said, oh, here it is. This is the final piece. I said, I'm afraid that your dad is going to promote the idea with you that I'm a bad mom for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
She literally throws her head back in a full-on laugh, slaps her thigh and goes, Mom, that is hysterical. Dad can't stand you. Why would you care what he thinks? Now we're talking.
He already says you're a bad mom, so just get on with it.
Too late.
He's not waiting until you leave.
that ship's, sailed. Oh, yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
You might as well run with it. And I did. 2 weeks later, I was in Seattle.
Kids do say the darndest things.
They do, those kids. No filter. Telling you. Tell them to speak the truth, and they do. And look what happens.
That's fantastic.
It really was. Yeah. And that was just that clarion moment of, all right, this is scary. They trust me. I could learn to trust me. Why don't I do that?
Yeah.
And off I went. Yeah. And so they've come back and forth, one still lives here in Seattle. She doesn't live with me, but she's, a fabulous student at a local private arts college.
Nice.
Doing great. And they're all doing great, So it was definitely the controversial thing to do with my family and with culture.
Yeah.
Man, when people heard, woo, the looks I got.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I knew that was what there was to do to be a demonstration of what I told my kids all those years.
Was okay to do.
You can be anybody. You can do it. Trust yourself. And they're looking at me like, yeah, but what are you doing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why they were able to say, Mom, go.
So now they've been here. You've been here for 6 years and you've got this business up and off the ground and taking flight.
It is.
Do they know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you're out to them.
They totally know. Perfect. They know about the BDSM. They know about the sex stores, the boutiques.
Excellent.
They know about all of it. They are 24, 22, 20, and 18.
Ah, okay.
My daughters from my first marriage. And then my son is 13. Now, he has an abridged version.
Okay.
Available.
An age appropriate.
Perfectly reasonable.
Age appropriate.
Totally.
Version.
But the girls all know, and they're like, God, Mom, you rock.
Now, the internet was invented before he was born, so he probably already knows.
We did have an interesting conversation last summer. It was fabulous. He laughed so hard he knocked himself off the bed laughing.
Sweet.
It was one of those conversations. Yeah,
that's awesome.
He loved it.
That's awesome.
He got them almost pretty
so
cool.
So what is the Timid Tramp? What's the brand? You're building an empire here.
Timid Tramp is a persona around whom people are very comfortable and intrigued at the same time. So she's not comfortable like, ooh, safe. She's comfortable like, oh my God, I could tell this chick anything.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't get fazed, right? So she's a 1940s madam of sorts, you know, the crisp white blouse, the nice pleated pants, but she's got a latex corset under that thing.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
That chick is interesting.
Yeah.
And
that's your persona.
It is. Yeah. Yep. She's my bad side.
Yes. Excellent. And, I love it.
She's the not conflicted part.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
And when I created that persona, it was amazing how easy it was to step into it and take that on and separate myself from all of the old conversations, all of the doubt and the, you know, there was a freedom. Mm-hmm. And I understood theater all of a sudden, and I understood personas. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
You know, role play. But she is, you know, she's an empress. She runs an empire where people in her domain and under her reign, if you will, are really free to be themselves no matter how kinky, kooky, silly they are.
Sure.
And still be treated with dignity.
Nice.
Dignity is the undercurrent running theme of the Timid Tramp and who she is and what she makes available to people.
Cool. And you're starting with the dinners. You've got a couple tiers of things right
now.
Yeah. So you don't have sex doors open yet.
Nope.
But that's coming.
It is. Mm-hmm. Quite a series of offerings. And what I was looking for initially were events that people would find appealing, inviting, safe, but still really interesting and kind of edgy.
Sure.
And how to combine all of that in one place. So I've had 6 events so far. The Unveiling Intimacy Dinner in a Scene.
What is that?
Unveiling Intimacy Dinner in a Scene is a dinner at Staple and Fancy.
Ooh.
Yes. The wine cellar, the private dining room in Ballard, where we invite up to 20 people to participate in this amazing dinner, you know, served by the incredible Staple and Fancy staff, where we have this private room and we can open up the conversation at the table to topics of power exchange and kink and BDSM and service and have this amazing intimate conversation among strangers.
Oh.
So I call them intimate strangers. And it's amazing how quickly the coalescing of interests creates the conversation. So my partner in business for those events is Max, the amazing Max Cameron.
Yes.
BondageLessons.com. Yeah. And after my perseverant tracking him down for 6 months.
He's elusive sometimes, isn't he?
Oh my gosh, that man. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, I think you're really going to want to do this thing with me. I told him about it and he said, oh, absolutely. This is amazing. So the dinner happens at this big table. We have this amazing conversation. It's open Q&A. Max shares quite a bit about his own personal history and story, and then the basic history of BDSM, the gay leather culture, you know, and it's fascinating, and people are just intrigued at the content of this conversation and his prowess at making the information available and appealing.
Right.
So, you know, they're, you know,
and he's
all,
just damn funny. He's just fun. He's a naughty Steven Spielberg.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. I got it. But really the most timid, concerned person in the room, I've watched it happen every time, winds up, you know, bending in the love and the care and the regard that Max has for people and this conversation, what it makes available. So once we've got their attention and we're kind of now all friends, there's a moment during the dinner where the Timid Tramp goes from the hostess, the divine, you know, producer of this event, the savvy gal, to all of a sudden this very surrendered, submissive, demure, feminine thing at Max's feet.
Nice.
And the room drops. because they are really trying to sort out what the hell just
happened.
Uh-huh. Right. And then ensues the, you know, more conversation, but in the dynamic of power exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to see it firsthand.
Explain what exactly is power exchange.
That is a broad sort of overall umbrella for an awful lot of things.
Sure.
But how I would say it is the willingness for two human beings to create an agreement and then a set of exchanges, mm-hmm. interactions, if you will, where a person is dominant, the other person is submissive. And there's a consensual, agreed environment for an agreed time where the dynamics are completely turned around, and they're, you know, my submissive energy in a power exchange with Max is in honor of dominance, not Max the identity,
right.
Not Max the person, not the man standing in front of me, but in honor of dominance, care, regard, mm-hmm. power, strength. And I, as a powerful woman, being willing to submit in that, in the surrender, trust, serenity, peacefulness,
mm-hmm.
delicateness, delicacy of that.
So you shut your sassy mouth is basically what you're telling me.
Yeah, 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 for a little bit. I said for a select amount of time.
Right, right,
exactly.
I can only manage this for like 20 minutes.
Yes.
Like it has to be on the schedule.
Clock's ticking.
That's all I'm saying.
But so in that power exchange bubble, if you will.
Sure.
There's just that moment of completely letting go and being so intimate and so connected with this human being that I completely trust that all of a sudden all that background chatter in the mind is gone.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost like meditation.
It really is very Zen-like. Mm-hmm. And that's what people wind up seeing.
Mm-hmm.
There is really no explaining power exchange, but that's the best I can do for
now. That was beautiful.
Right?
I like asking everyone because it's a really interesting definition for people. And there's the overarching, you know, definition, but
it's
people embrace it and embody it and digest it in different ways.
That's
so
true.
I like to speak to those because it's connecting with people on the other end of the airwaves. So
it's so exciting.
Yeah. So you do this dinner and show.
Yeah.
And you get on your knees and shut your sassy mouth.
For a little bit.
Is that before or after dessert?
It's
or is
between
it dessert?
Dinner and dessert, usually, not to give it away, but something like that.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So you
spring
it on people.
It's different each time. You know, it might include a little bit of rope. It might include just demonstrations of service. It, you know, it's off the cuff, actually. Mm-hmm. None of it's choreographed.
Right.
I look at Max, I give him the cue and let him know that I'm ready for the conversation to shift, and then he does the thing he does.
Makes it happen.
He makes this amazing thing happen. Then people get the magic of that too. You know, that it's, you're going from one moment of life going how normal life goes. And then in an instant with an intention, everything alters. And it's that immediate. And it doesn't take a lot of work and doesn't take a lot of conversation. It's really that powerful.
Right.
And that's what people get in being able to see that. So then after that, there's question and answer, you know, because now they have new questions. Given what just happened, you know, it stirs up all this rich field of, wait a minute, why would you be willing to get on your knees? What was that about? Say often, you know, some women in that say, why would you do that? And then I get to answer that question, you know, and they get it. It's really great that they get it.
Do you have people that get triggered in a negative way by what they see?
Only really the one time, you know, somebody got defiant and like kind of
defensive almost. Or
yeah. I mean, she's just something flagged for her about why in the hell I would get on my knees in front of this man, this, you know, strong feminist. And I said, well, there's this whole other side of that conversation that often goes unexplored. And then we had the conversation while I was on my knees and then she got it.
Cool.
You know, she got it and she grappled with it and she, you know, she kept grappling with it, but she kept acknowledging the beauty of it, you know, and yeah. So it was absolutely flying in the face of everything that a strong woman is supposed to do to defend her, you know, vitality and her position and things.
Sure. And that's the unveiling intimacy dinners that you put on. And then there's another tier to that. So if people go to those and they like what they see and they're interested in exploring a little bit more, have more questions, what do they do next?
They get to go to something called Unveiling Surrender, which is an overnight occasion, similar kind of tone. We have a wonderful, beautiful dinner, usually at a gorgeous fresh French restaurant with a very fresh view of the Puget Sound.
Nice.
And then a bed and breakfast day where we get to do a more in-depth scene. So rather than just see a glimpse of a scene or bits of a scene and some basic components, they get to see a full-on scene. None of the scenes are sexual. Okay. There's that's just not what we're about. It is about the power dynamic and the exchange and kind of the intimacy, the surrender part. So then they get to see really kind of a full on scene and really watch. It's a smaller group, you know, more intimate group, not 20 people. It's, you know, two or maybe four couples max.
Okay.
So they get to watch the scene, whole scene happen in a very relaxed environment. And then we stay overnight, get back together in the morning for a breakfast to kind of debrief some thoughts and like, wow, what was that like? And let's talk about it some more. And also in that occasion, they get to invite an opportunity to interact with Max.
Okay.
Maybe they want to feel the touch of a single tail. Maybe they want to know what it's like to have a, you know, a rope harness on their chest. And so they can actually now interact, which is really, really great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's...
Does he bring his big toy bag to those?
He brings his toy bag, and I think it's pretty big.
Yeah. That's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah.
So you've got that going on, and then what is your next step in this? So you've got the dinners happening, and...
What is one of the things that we learned, and it was a test run. Those six events were a test run to just see how people responded, what else they needed about it, what else we could offer them. Because the design is now to make all this wealth of resources, whether it's the CSPC or Max's private lessons or, you know, some great local open poly relationship coaches, you know, make all those resources available from a credible, you know, reliable source. So that's its design. And then what we found is that people kind of needed even a preview to that.
Right.
Because this idea of coming to a BDSM dinner, even though it's at a public place or respectable, you know, they're still a little nerved out by it, right?
Well, yeah.
How do you explain that? And so we created something called dinner salons.
Okay.
And the dinner salons are a little more, less, it's, let's see, it's not less engagement, but it's a lighter weight engagement where there are 40 people now coming to have a salon type conversation at a wonderful location where we can congregate in three different areas. So three speakers, including Max, myself, and the wonderful Ari Kardosh coach. And they can have a conversation with Max about BDSM and power. They can have, and other things, and see demonstrations. They can have a conversation with Ari about, God, what is it to manage and navigate the inner workings of relationships, including monogamous, open, and poly relationships. Really valuable. And they can choose to hang out with the timid tramp and have a conversation called the power of intimacy, which really is that, why would I even consider BDSM? What's the point? What's that going to add to my relationship?
Right.
And so the conversation.
And what do you tell people? Like in that quick little,
in that,
you know, you got your little booth set up that says the doctor's in. Just managing peanuts there, you know. 5 cents.
Well, it is kind of, you know, it's Charlie and Charlie Brown and Lucy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's that
not in a bad way, but just, you know, you're making it accessible. And that's a less expensive price point than some of the other.
It is, yeah. Okay. So it's like $75 to come to, you know, cocktails and appetizers, nice. And to spend an hour each. Though it's a you know, 3+ hour event.
It's like a rotation type thing.
Exactly. Nice. Okay. Isn't that great?
Yeah. That's worth the price of admission.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think so, too. So the conversation about the power of intimacy is, you know, in relationships of all kinds, not just romantic, intimate, sexual relationships, but in relationships of all kinds, what it takes is a certain amount of surrender and willingness to connect. Well, it does. It does take that. And mostly we're looking for where we're going to be insulted, where we're going to be injured, and how to guard for it. That's, you know, it's what we do going into relationships. Can I trust this person? Are they going to let me down? Are they going to be honest? Are they gonna, all this stuff goes on. And then we gauge, can we trust this person? Often the question that goes unasked is, do I trust myself? Mm-hmm. Do I trust myself to navigate this relationship in a way that honors both of us? Right. Or am I just looking out for me?
Right.
You know? So then we lead into what are some of the things that get in the way of being fully available mm-hmm. for real intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex.
Right.
Right. That full on surrender and submission to another human being, whether you trust them or not.
Right.
Do I trust myself to be intimate with this person? Or do I really think that I need to be defensive and guarded and wait for proof? Because mm-hmm. guess what? You're not going to get it. Most human beings, you're going to find some reason not to trust them.
Yeah.
You know, and then the relationship can be about being on guard and being defensive and waiting to be disappointed. Or it can be about, I'm the source of the workability and the intimacy in this relationship, and I trust myself to provide it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have responsible conversations with my partner when I'm not experiencing that with them.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Right? That's a different conversation.
Yeah.
So that's the conversation, the power of intimacy. And really how to be available.
How do people get there?
Get to...
knowing whether or not they can trust themselves. Because I saw, you know, working at New Horizons, I saw people that came in with like solid boundaries that they stuck to. Mm-hmm. They had great experiences. And then I saw people that thought they had solid boundaries with themselves and with their partners. And it turned into some wishy-washy kind of stuff. Because when yep. you put the pedal to the metal, sometimes things go down a different path than you expect.
Yeah, great, great turn in this conversation, which is really where we're going. That was one of the reasons it had me be timid initially. Mm-hmm. When I started mm-hmm. looking at the lifestyle, you know, I dated someone who was interested in the swing lifestyle mm-hmm. and investigated that. Scared me. Scared me. And then I looked at BDSM after that. So I was kind of looking all around. But one of the things that I saw that I was kind of upset to see mm-hmm. was the kind of dysfunction that happens in that setting, because I was kind of looking at it like the Holy Grail. The sex positive community, swingers, people that are into power exchange and BDSM, they right. got it figured out, obviously.
Right. Of course they do, right? Because otherwise how could you possibly do things like this?
I mean, really?
Exactly.
These people are elevated yes. and highly evolved. And, you know,
it turns out they're the duckiest ducks on the water.
It got interesting. Imagine my disappointment.
Wow.
And so it took me a bit to just navigate my own concerns about, wow, okay, this isn't the answer. Open poly, that's not the answer. So what is? And I thought, oh, what are the, you know, what's in common with all of us and what we're really looking for is this experience of connection, intimacy, safety, mm-hmm. the ability to surrender, the ability to be yourself completely, and be unveiled and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Human beings want this stuff, you yeah. know, it's what we're designed for. And so I thought, okay, well, how are people currently using these resources? And I could see that it was like, oh, we're going to spice up our relationship and have a threesome. Mm-hmm. Oh my. You know, without doing the work to be able to move through the scary spaces of vulnerability towards intimacy. Because mm-hmm. certainly inviting a third person into the bedroom is not the cure. You no. want to stir some stuff up, threaten someone's sense of security.
Right.
And around sex, there's just nothing like, you know, conversations and the challenges and difficulties around our sexual identity and how we see ourselves and how we perceive ourselves as valuable to our partners, to really have that threat be like going for the jugular. Mm-hmm. So even though the open poly conversation was totally enticing and I thought, wow, that's definitely the solution, is people who can have those conversations and invite other people into their relationships, really have it together, I could see that wasn't the case. And I thought, all right, what's missing? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the conversation that's missing that allows people really the freedom and the foundation to forward those kinds of relationships?
And whether it's poly or BDSM or swinging,
anything other yep. than the standard box set, mm-hmm. you know, of values and conditions. And I thought, wow, it's got to be personal integrity. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. a sense of oneself where my position and what I'm doing with my life and why I'm doing it is indefensible. Mm-hmm. I don't need to defend this with anyone.
Right.
I'm so clear for myself about what this is for me that I don't need to pick it about it, and I don't need to argue about it, and I don't need to explain it. I'm just clear that this is a path of honor for me. And that's what I saw missing. And that's, you know, another offering that I have created through my own kind of reworking the pieces of this is, wow, what conversation needs to be had with people so they trust themselves with this adventure.
Wow. Wow. Right. So you're starting with a bedrock foundation there with the Timid Tramp Empire of the personal work, little exploration, yeah. Come and, you know, do a round robin. Then you've got the dinners, then you've got the overnight. And then
you can hear how it worked backwards, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I had to go back to the drawing board.
That's all right. Yeah.
And that was the thing. You know, that was the thing that I did see missing. It didn't matter what mechanics were available, how many great dildos or vibrators or spreader bars you could get your hands on. The mechanics weren't the answer. You can go through the motions any old day and not get the desired results. Why? And it's the intention in the pursuit, you know,
yeah.
And the ability to maintain the integrity of the intention throughout. That's where it gets a little dicey. So
with BDSM specifically, you see, you know, now that you're doing the business aspect mm-hmm. of it, you see a lot of probably what I've seen too. So what do you see with BDSM specifically compared to people that are engaging in BDSM and have obviously done their work? Mm-hmm. They are solid in who they are. They know what their personal ethos is. They have their boundaries. They're doing what they're doing. And people that maybe are in this to just explore that aren't mm-hmm. quite sure. What are those two paths look like as people wow. progress?
Yeah. You know, as I kind of climbed up through the ranks of the swinger lifestyle and having those conversations with people and then stepped into the BDSM realm, I saw that consistent thread of the people who knew what they were doing, why they were doing it, and they operated with full-on integrity to the agreements that they had created with people.
Mm-hmm.
It was brilliant. I mm-hmm. mean, they got to do stuff that was unfathomable,
right?
Because mm-hmm. they were doing what they said they were going to do and in full agreement and consent with their partners. I was
right.
like, there it is.
Right.
And then all, and so, you know, there was that part of the lifestyle. I just didn't see it happen very often.
Right.
So I thought, okay, swingers don't have it together. I'm going to go check out BDSM.
Now. I'm going to defend my damn people here because, girl.
And it'll come around. Promise. We'll come around.
I'll tell you what.
But
when you dedicate your life 3 nights a week, you're going to see a whole different thing. I just asked you specifically about BDSM, so we're just going to stick to that. Don't you leave my damn swingers alone. Leave my damn swingers alone.
Without that background context, you know.
I appreciate your experience. Now move on.
Get over it. So the beautiful segue to that is that I saw the same thing in the BDSM.
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh,
yeah. All right.
The parts come together.
You can keep talking.
I'll talk more about that now. And so it wasn't about the activity. And like I said before, it
sure.
wasn't about the mechanics. It was about the intention of the people participating in the activity. So when I started to kick around in the BDSM circles and watch the parties and you know, all the stuff, I thought, you know, I had known about Max from before. I knew that he was somebody who loved this community,
mm-hmm.
stood for what was valuable in the community, and wanted to make it available to people. And so I kind of used that example as my guide
sure.
for how things should look. You know, I'm sure Max would, you know, have a say about that, you know, have an opinion about that. But really, that was how it was for me. And I just trusted him. So I used that as my waymark, and I saw the same thing. You
sure.
know, people could go to the club, they could do their thing, they could swing a flogger, they could pop a single tail, they could put somebody in chains or whatever. But unless that intention of, you know, unless the intention of the two people or the three people or how many people are interacting in the thing is cohesive and agreed to, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So it all really came back to intention and consent.
Mm-hmm.
All the conduct and mechanics in between intention and, you know, intention, consent, and then the delivery of it, it was just content. But without those pieces really in place, it doesn't matter what you're doing in life with a partner, you're going to make a mess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a problem. And we could be talking now about a monogamous vanilla relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
It isn't about BDSM, alternative lifestyle, anything. It's about human beings and interactions.
Yeah.
And
bringing, I'm sure honor the gays have this problem as well. Too,
so I suspect where humans be, there will be this. Right.
Yeah. So you're looking to fix that at the core.
I am.
And help people really progress in the lighter side. And when I say that, I mean, it's not accentuating your negative qualities. It's bringing out the intimacy. It's bringing out the best of the best
and
in you.
The pathway to that is examining the scary stuff.
Sure.
It's examining the stuff that's uncomfortable, that makes us squirm around. Examining what makes me feel vulnerable is being honest, or, you know, what makes me feel vulnerable is on my knees with a single tail coming at me. Whatever that is, mm-hmm. that has a person in a position of, God, I feel so vulnerable right now and scared. Something just so human and alive is available in that moment. And in a trusted environment, that's sacred.
Yeah.
In an environment where it's not safe to be that, it's frightening. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it can be devastating. And the difference is intention, consent, and then conduct.
Right. Right. Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
BDSM made available is exploring the play of power.
Yeah.
And that makes most of us nervous, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Power, yikes.
Absolutely. So cool. So what have you got coming up next?
What's coming up next are some events in September. Going back to the drawing board gave us the dinner salon. So the first event coming up is September 16th.
Nice.
Dinner salons with sexy events in Seattle. So mm-hmm. the Timid Tramp is all about sexy events in Seattle and then talks about, you know, these different things. And some of those events are hers. The dinner salons with Max and Ari. Mm-hmm. And then September 18th at Staple and Fancy in Ballard is Unveiling Intimacy.
Nice.
Dinner and a scene.
Nice.
And an October date coming up for Unveiling Surrender. October date to be announced.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And they can find, you have a website?
I do. It's under construction through September 1st. So, it's you know, website.
So get there September 1st and pop that cherry.
Yeah, get right in there and buy those tickets. But the brown paper tickets, you know, site and link will be up for purchasing the tickets.
Okay. And it'll be timidtramp.com, I assume.
Timidtramp.com. Yep.
Okay.
And then brown paper tickets, Unveiling Intimacy, and brown paper tickets.
Cool. Perfect. Throw a link up with our website. So
fabulous.
I do have a question for you.
You do.
When you go for body hair removal, what do you go for?
What do I go for? Like mm-hmm. the technique or the location?
Either.
Both.
Let's talk like, about that.
Like, do you do a landing strip? Do you go bare down there? What's your motive operandi?
You know, that's so great. I really admire the landing strip. I admire that.
Do you have one?
I do. I personal confession time.
All right.
I really do.
Are you wearing panties right now or?
I am.
Damn it. All right. I was going to see it, but that's maybe another time.
Well, there's not much to them, you know, just take a second.
I ask because we're sponsored by Sugar Me Julie.
Outstanding.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite people, and she sugars my junk on a regular basis. So.
Mine as well.
Keeps the workspace clean.
Sugar and junk.
Do you shave? What do you do?
That's a shave.
Yeah.
It's a shave.
I'll hook you up.
Once you sugar,
you'll never go back.
I've never been sugared.
It's amazing.
I think sugared goes right along with this entire conversation.
Well, and it just makes your pussy sweeter.
Right.
I love hearing that. Oh, wow. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. So check out Sugar Me Julie.
Promise. That's great.
And and we'll get your stuff up on the website. Where else can they contact us there, Freckles?
Well, they can contact us at theofacepodcast@gmail.com. And they can follow us on Twitter @TheOFacePodcast. They can follow Miss Jenga @MissJenga, who apparently never tweets.
I do periodically. I'll tweet about this.
Awesome.
I'll retweet you. How's that?
Oh, there we go.
We'll have a whole little
indeed.
Circle thing going on.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, since we're
a circle
twit. What's your Twitter handle?
Timidtramp.
Timidtramp. @Timidtramp.
She got it all.
Yeah, right.
She nailed it.
That's perfect.
They're all mine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mine.
Let's see. What else? Website, theofacepodcast.com. Mm-hmm. Where you can get all of the links and everything that we're going to put up and links to our sponsors and everything else. And I would like to personally thank the Timid Tramp for giving 110%.
God, what a pleasure.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
And excellent. That.
Don't.
Oh, yeah. Don't. Oh, I am. God, yes. Damn it. That is another podcast in Genghis Khan.
Oh, fuck off.
Well, that looks easy enough. And Joey is going to try it out.
I've got enough cord. Do you have enough cord?
I have enough cord.
You have cord?
I'm pretty sure. It looks like it.
Yeah. Excellent. So you want to hold your microphone like it's a dick just up against you.
There's a
you can just you can switch. Lick it a little bit if you want. These are relatively clean.
There's an on switch. Is it on?
Are you on?
It
is. Ooh, you just turned her on.
It's right. On now.
That's right. Technology for the win. All right, cool.